I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at MixingMusicPodcast.com. Welcome back. What the heck am I saying?
Let me help you out there, DK. Welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. My name is Lou, and with me, as always, I have my lovely co-host, Daddy D.
Yeah, there you go. I was just gonna redo the intro, but I might just edit it and keep that in. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK. With me today, as always, is my lovely co-host, Loverboy Lou. Certified Loverboy Lou.
Oh, no. Certified Loverboy, certified. No, but I'm not the second one. I'll take Loverboy. Don't be the second one. Poor Drake. This weekend was not his weekend.
Hell yeah, this decade is not his decade. No. And then, all right, well, welcome back to the Mixed Music Podcast. We're recording the day after the Super Bowl, and it is Monday, and we wanted to do a quick round of responses to some questions that we get.
Some Q&A.
Across the board on a few things. I'm probably missing a few questions, but we want to ask a couple. We were asked a couple questions, and we're trying to group them all up. Just a regular Q&A type episode where we're trying to answer specific questions from the audience. One of the questions is actually from Discord, from a longtime listener of the pod. Another one is just from Instagram, and I think the other one, I'm trying to find the third one, which I'll probably find while we're doing this, is actually from Spotify comments, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure exactly if I can find it, but I'm going to try my best to find it. But the first one is a bunch of, let's just go through a bunch of them. The first one is from longtime listener of the show, and exclusive podcast listener, subscriber, which, by the way, anybody can get access to by going to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive, Skatebar JP42 on Discord. Hi, James and DK. On the recent podcast, you and DK mentioned that if you're serious about mixing, you need to learn your plugins inside and out. You guys have stated before that you need to know and use Pro Tools. This is in response to the last episode that we did with what is mixing, going back to that. And then a bunch of episodes before with me and James. But we need to know your plugins inside and out. Yes and no on that one. You guys stated before that you need to know and use Pro Tools. Yes, we do. We have stated that before. I need to address the nuance on that, which is if you are looking to be an engineer in the commercial recorded music industry, that means if you are planning to be a recording engineer in LA, Nashville, or New York, or in any area where there are any areas in the world that there are more commercial recording studios that you want to bounce in and out of and around, yes, you need to know Pro Tools. Do you need to know Pro Tools as a producer? No. As someone that is not in the commercial recorded music industry? No, not necessarily. Even as a mixer, I would recommend learning Pro Tools for industry standards. And like also that is the DAW that most people will like pass around sessions in, especially if you're working with labels and commercial clients. But it's even as a mixer, I wouldn't even say that it's you need to know Pro Tools. It's just better for you to know Pro Tools.
Yeah.
Lou, any comments on that real quick?
Yeah, realistically, I've seen people do some pretty amazing things in and outside of Pro Tools. But if you're ever looking to have, I guess you could say on the more commercial side, success, like if you're going to be working for, let's say Record Plant, Paramount, or any of those kind of locations, Pro Tools is an absolute must. Like it's part of your application. And so for that reason, you should know Pro Tools. And sometimes you're thrown into a situation where you need to know other DAWs. I've been thrown into recording sessions where I had to track somebody's live performance and all they had was Ableton, even though I asked if they had Pro Tools and they said yes. I had to at least know a little bit about Ableton to be able to make that session happen and still collect my check. And I've had situations where I have to mix an entire album in Logic just because it was the producer's preference that I keep it in Logic. So knowing various DAWs is actually not going to be at your detriment, but if you had to specialize in one because you're looking to work in commercial studios and get booked a lot for bigger opportunities, then you need to know Pro Tools. Unfortunately, it is the industry standard. And for that reason alone, it's a need to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Including like specifically with recording and mixing engineering, right?
Yeah, or if you get into post-production.
Yeah, post-production as well, like any sort of dialogue. Yeah, so commercial recorded audio music, you have to know Pro Tools. Like not because it is superior, but rather this is, and I don't even know if industry standard, what that means really. I think it means in the sense that like, pragmatically, when these businesses were built, Pro Tools was the only option.
It was the alternative to tape.
Yeah. So in the digital world was the only option for a long time. So all of these systems and companies where hours and hours of time were spent into training, building curriculums for curriculums for training employees, for manuals, everything was based around the certification process and the manual process of using Pro Tools.
So
not because
so that,
Pro Tools is better.
Yeah, so much so that there's also certain tools that Avid had developed that actually supported studios where latency was more of an issue than it is now with native systems. So for instance, HDX was available for anybody that still wanted the console workflow with high channel counts and high needs for plugins and all that kind of stuff, because they didn't have a ton of gear. You could actually process their plugins in real time by using the DSP on their PCIe cards rather than doing it off of your CPU and bogging down the latency from there. So because of that, you found them in a lot of studios that had big rig consoles because it was the only option at the time that really gave you that. Nowadays, latency is actually really good on native systems, but
yeah, it's almost
HDX
a non-issue.
Is still there for, well, now they call it Pro Tools Ultimate with HDX cards, but that's still the only DSP based high channel count option on the market. And because of that, you're going to find it at places like Record Plant where they have, let's say, a 96 channel frame SSL 4000 or 9000, whatever it is, but if you have a high channel count console in front of you, chances are you're probably going HDX if you're a commercial location. But if you're like a private studio or like a project studio, chances are you don't even need HDX anymore. Like you could run Logic all day and still do high channel count work and all that kind of stuff with no problem.
Yeah.
But in those more commercial spots,
So in short, the reason why Pro Tools is quote unquote industry standard is because of the general economics of innovation. Mm-hmm. Usually when a company or in macroeconomics, a country creates a new viable product, and through innovation, there is a certain amount of time until that technology is copied by other companies and countries, right? So, like at first, Pro Tools was like a monopoly in the digital audio workstation because the only competition was like tape, right? And then,
Audacity.
And then eventually, other copies. Of other companies started creating software, but mm-hmm. Pro Tools just had too long of a time where they were the only innovators in the space. Whether or not they're still innovators is a whole nother story, but that's why they have the basic, the market. It's not because it's superior. It's because that they were the first to do it and the best to do it for a long, long time.
It's kind of like Waves plugins, where a lot of people see Waves as like the number one best plugin company out there, but they've been doing it almost as long as Pro Tools has been around. Like, they were pretty quick on the scene to create a lot of emulation style plugins, which was not really what people were asking for at the time, but they were already making it. You know, they were coming out with, you know, like their limiters, their basic graphic EQs and things of that nature. But once they started coming out with, like, you know, LA-2A clones and things of that nature, people started really paying attention to them more. And they were one of the only brands at the time supporting like DSP plugins and all that. So people with HDX systems in the back in the day, you know, were using Waves and all that. Autantara's Autotune was also one of the only companies that had any kind of Autotune plugin, one, available, but also was DSP enabled for TDM systems. And so, like, some of this popularity that exists now is just legacy. It's more legacy than it is a question of quality, because everybody can make a bad product. Waves is not exempt from putting out something that's not crazy useful once in a while, but they also have a lot of really useful stuff that, like, my favorite thing from them still is the API 2500. Like,
yeah.
I like the snap on that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, there are some very niche specific topics about the sound of the digital summing between DAWs and stuff. Regardless of whether or not that exists to any granular amount, it's a fucking retarded thing to care about, honestly. Like, it's not creatively, it doesn't entice creativity. It doesn't help people become creative. What it does is it just creates isolation and reasons to, it creates FOMO and reasons to remove creativity from the process. Don't do that. There is no one sonically superior sound. There isn't. Hits have been made on every DAW, including the cheap and free ones.
Dude, okay, or like the cloud amount of hits ones we've heard recently off of FL Studio really shut up a lot of people about being like, oh, you produce an FL Studio? Oh, that's weird. That's cheap. That's not very good. But then you hear all the platinum records and all the things that got nominated for a Grammy that were made in FL Studio, and it's like, hey, people are quickly changing their tune.
I was thinking stuff that's even less.
GarageBand?
Even less than that, dude. Like,
an iPhone recording?
Yeah, iPhone recording.
Well, I mean,
have you ever heard of like Soundtrap?
You know what's funny?
Cloud DAW?
I heard about it for the first time through our friend Jonah. Like, we were troubleshooting something. He's like, I recorded in Soundtrap. I didn't even know what he was talking about. I was like, cool. No, I mean, as long as it worked.
Yeah, there are, I mean, like, branding-wise, lesser respected DAWs that hits are made from, so it's not a matter of that. Again, going back to this, the only reason why we recommend Pro Tools is if you're trying to be in the commercial music space. And that doesn't mean that you have to use it, but I think that means that you have to know it. Like, literally as part of a resume. That's all it is. And then, let's see here. I have questions, suggestions for maybe a Patreon episode. Right now I'm using a 5-year-old gaming PC, FL Studio, and headphones. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I'm stepping up my mixing game and would love to hear y'all's take on technical aspects of specific essential plugins beginners would benefit learning about first, even if they're still using stock and free plugins. Or is there a list of previous episodes somewhere? So obviously, number one is getting comfortable with your stock plugins. The only thing that I will say about using FL for mixing specifically is that the workflow is so different from other DAWs and from like the real analog world that I would argue that it's fairly non-transferable workflow.
Yeah.
So
there is Pro Tools First for free nowadays, right?
Yeah, and there's other DAWs too. Like, literally almost most other DAWs are better for mixing, not because it's a superior form of workflow, but rather if you learn to mix in the FL Studio, the workflow is so different that I do not believe that it is as transferable as a of a skill as if you were to learn mixing in any other DAW.
Yeah.
Just the way that the routing is, how busing works or not. it is just like the way that you have to route tracks and add inserts and it is a very specific skill for that DAW when it comes to mixing.
Yeah.
And that's my only thing. Otherwise FL is good. And even if you learn to mix in FL, that's great, but you just have to realize that you're going to have to learn another workflow on literally almost any other DAW. So just be aware of that. Let's see here. Stock plugins are good on almost every single DAW. The ones on Reaper look ugly, but they're still good. And it doesn't matter if you're using a PC. There are reasons why people use a Mac, but they're very minor and non-fundamental. And so I wouldn't worry too much about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Other than the stock plugins, I would recommend signing up for like one subscription service. Like Lou and I are huge proponents of Plugin Alliance.
Yeah.
Like Plugin Alliance, I'm pretty sure you can get a subscription for like 10, 15 bucks a month. It's like cheaper than
Waves. Better scaling for what you're getting. I don't feel like their cheapest one is like, give them the worst ones. I feel like their cheapest one is like, here's the essentials that are going to be daily use anyways, versus like I've seen other subscriptions where if you want to pay less, you get kind of like the lesser sought after ones, like the ones people don't really talk about as much, which isn't really an issue. Once again, the whole idea is learn your plugins. But if you had to pay money, you get way more bang for your buck with Plugin Alliance when it comes to starting small and growing with it.
Yeah. And we're not endorsed by them. So that's actual just personal endorsement.
Yeah.
I think there's a few other smaller reasons for Plugin Alliance. Like if you're going to pick one set of plugins.
Oh, my favorite reason is that at the end of the year, you get a voucher. Every year, I make use of that voucher. Oh, wait, maybe that's on the old plan. I know I'm grandfathered on my plan.
That's one of them too. But I was thinking more, so if you are Foley or like some sort of sound design or dialogue editing, I would change it to either Waves or just Isotope subscription as your one and single subscription. Yeah. If you're mixing music and like kind of like emulating a mix engineer or recording engineer, even a mastering engineer.
Plugin Alliance.
Yeah, I would go Plugin Alliance for sure. Mm-hmm. Part of that reason is because most of Plugin Alliance is emulating real hardware as well. And yeah. I think understanding and learning about real hardware and like the different workflows and different ways that these companies have innovated to pragmatically ameliorate a small issue within our audio world is vastly helpful.
Beyond also, fun fact, if you are on the UA platform, right? And you see a lot of the UAD plugins, a lot of them are from Plugin Alliance. Well, mainly Brainworks, but through a collaboration of the two, UA hosts some of theirs on their DSP platform. So if you're familiar with some of the UA plugins, you might already be familiar with some of the Plugin Alliance ones. But aside from that, I've talked about like really liking bootstrapper companies. I really like them. I like to support smaller brands as much as I can. But I've noticed that Plugin Alliance will actively make an effort to work with other professionals in our industry that have their own hardware and create the plugin version of that hardware with them and host it on their platform. So if, for instance, our friend Maurer Applebaum, who actually makes the oven, the stove, and the toaster, I believe they have under Plugin Alliance the oven, which was really cool because it's such a niche piece of hardware, but I know it's used in live sound. I know it's used in studio. It's pretty cool. We've been able to test it at the studio. DK, were you there when Maurer came through?
Yep.
Yeah. And like, it's like one of those pieces of hardware where you really have to understand what you're touching, because even the nomenclatures given to the controls are uniquely their own. Like you wouldn't know what it's doing until you talk to Maurer at first or read the manual. But the nice thing is that Plugin Alliance is like, yo, that piece of hardware is cool. It's not super popular. It's not super well known around, like, I guess the beginning stages of engineers, but it's something that we think people should see. And so they partnered with Maurer to create a plugin version of it. They also work with like Better Maker and other brands like that, who, you know, alternatively, you could have the hardware and it would be plugin controlled anyways, but they made a native version available for people, which is cool.
Yep. All right. Moving on. Also, do you as professional engineers use free plugins while mixing for clients?
Yeah.
The obvious answer is, of course. Yeah. There is an assumption in the next couple sentences, but maybe that's too sensitive. Do you use any free plugins when you were learning that you approximately paid ones, that approximate the paid ones that you use now? Like, what would be some good free plugins to learn with, or it doesn't matter, just pick one and learn it. Yeah. There's an assumption of shame using free plugins. That is a false assumption. There is zero shame in doing that. There is no, cultural hierarchy of quality based on the paid amount of a plugin.
In fact, we've tried
superficially. Even superficially, I don't think there is one really. At least not enough at the level of professionalism that I'm aware of. Like, I've never heard of anybody like trying to argue superficial superiority via paying for plugins. At our level, I've never even heard, that's not even something that I've considered even. There is no shame in using free plugins at all.
Or even cheap plugins.
There's free plugins all the time.
Yeah.
There's a ton of great ones. You know, one that I always recommend downloading for everybody just because it has a bunch of super basic, like secondary stock plugins is the Kilohertz. Kilohertz has like a bundle of like 30 plugins that you can download all for free. Mm-hmm. And they're all really useful and great. They're just like general stock plugins. But they're fantastic. I use their free plugins all the time. And every single company has like free plugins that they use as part of their endorsement or sponsoring to like upsell you to their other paid plugins. But yeah, there are a bunch of free ones.
Yeah. I think on the cheaper side of things, just to give a good example of like why the price doesn't really matter that much, we're all at a certain point familiar with, what is it called? Vintage Verb from Valhalla. It's a $50 reverb. They've maintained their prices at $50. Thank you to them for doing that even through the pandemic, because that helps out a lot of people. But I know people with Procasti M7s who say, yeah, I just pull up the Vintage Verb. It sounds great. You know, like I don't have to use my M7 all the time to get the results I'm after. So to say that you went from a $50 plugin to what? The M7's like $3,000-$4,000 just for the base unit. You know, it's no expansions or anything like that. So we're talking about something that's almost like 100x its price, and it's still holding up. And if you're a fan of following different engineers, I know that people like Tizio use it all the time, and dude just won another Grammy this year. Shout out to Tizio. But that's kind of my point. Like, don't worry about the price tag specifically. Worry about like, why did you download it? Because at a certain point, I do find it distracting to have 1,000 plugins. You know, I've bought a lot of plugins and I make it a point since I paid for it for the most part to install as many as I can just so that if I remember about it, hey, I already paid for it. Might as well put it to use once in a while, even if it's not on every mix. But I still only really go back to the same 10 plugins most of the time. Like there's only so many EQs I choose from for specific things that I'm looking for. But just try downloading one at a time and working with that one at a time. And seeing if you like that one and compare it to other ones that you've liked before and see if you can hear the difference and try understanding the character of what they're doing, you know?
Exactly. I don't think there's much to say about that. Otherwise, they shouldn't be a distraction, although in the beginning to intermediate stages, it inevitably will be. And that's a necessary part of the learning process. It's just another stepping stone.
Having so many options and not making a decision.
The next question from, this is all part of the same post. I'm going to keep going down because these are kind of quick shots, quick, easy answers here. How long does it take for someone to become proficient with the plugin?
It depends on the time and dedication you put into it. Just like any trade or creative skill set. You know, nobody's going to learn how to perfectly dance in one night or anything, nor do I think they do it in 1 month, unless they really put the time and effort into it. You know, if you can dedicate, let's say, an hour to 2 hours a day, you'd be surprised what you could do in a month. But if you can only dedicate an hour or two a week, then, you know, you'd be surprised what you can do in 6 months. But it just really depends on how long you can dedicate yourself and for how much time you can dedicate yourself to it. You know, but there's no specific timeline. I've seen people pick things up real quick, and I've seen people who, you know, though I've helped them for 6 months, didn't really change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree, but I also kind of want to add on. I think that there's a lot of assumptions with this question too, like false assumptions. For example, like, what does it mean to be proficient with a plugin? What is the point of proficiency? Is the point of proficiency to be able to use it to be creative? Or is the point of proficiency like having read the manual and understanding the complete ins and outs? There's also the idea that some plugins literally have one knob and some plugins are extremely complicated and extremely flexible. And then there's the type of like synths, like Serum versus like the
That's
one
intense.
Knob filter, right? Waves one knob series. What does it mean to be proficient with a plugin? I'm going to remove the assumption and briefly define it as the ability to be creative with it. And I think that it can be anywhere from 10 hours, like 10,000 hours, depending on the plugin and the complexity of it, to 30 seconds. There are times where I pull up a new plugin and I play with it for 30 seconds and I'm like, all right, cool. This is how I'm going to use it. I like it. We're going to move on.
Yeah.
And I have such an overabundance of access to plugins that sometimes I use it for one preset or one specific type of sound or usage, and I don't use it for anything else. And that's part of my workflow. That speeds up my workflow. Like, this thing can be a phaser, and it can be a compressor, and it can do this, and a widener as well. But I only using it for the widener part of it, right?
Yeah. That's my reaction like to the Sandler Cheesy EQ. What is it? The TG tape channel? I forget what it's called from Waves, but the spreader on it is really nice, but I don't touch any other part of it. The compressors, the EQs or inputs or anything.
Yeah. And to Lou's point previously in different episodes, like, I think we're kind of the arrangement of questions is alluding to a slightly misconstrued understanding of the point of the plugins. The plugins are just a tool to get a job done. They are not the job in itself. And I'm probably misunderstanding and misinterpreting your line of questionings here. When reading your questions here, Skatebar JP42, it does lead me, these general questions do leave me to feel some concern about a misdirection of focus. And plugins are important and they are integral to our workflow, but they're not something, eventually you must understand that they're just a means to an end. They are not anywhere. They have almost no effect to the means themselves or to the ends themselves. In fact, I'm going to re-quote Zen and the Art of Mixing here by Mixer Man. Law number 5, I'm going to replace the word gear with plugins. Plugins used on a mix are tools that will make your life either easier or more difficult. They are not what makes a mix good or bad. That's all it is. Let's move on to the next question in the same post. Also, how do you find other people's songs to practice mixing on when you're starting out? Open mics, ads on a bulletin boards, or music stores? Asking around on social media? Ooh, this is great.
Yeah, that's actually a good question.
This is a very deep question that could be a whole set series of episodes in itself. But to answer briefly, I think you're right about the general concept, which is we have said many times before on the episode that finding clients locally or on the internet is better for practicing mixing than downloading free stems on Cambridge or any other site.
Yes.
Because mixing is 50%, not even, I would argue like 70 to 90%, the perception of subjective perception of a good mix and 10% the skill of a good mixer.
Yes.
Like, for example, so it's like when you practice on stems that are available without a client to judge how you mix them and to give feedback, you are mixing in a void. And arguably, what you're doing is just reinforcing your own premeditated subjective biases, and which removes your ability to be more creative and accepting to open to new experiences in the future. If you dig a hole and start to believe with yourself that my sound, my mixing skills are the best objectively, and I'm better at everything else, and you start to reinforce that ideology by continuing to mix for nothing other than your own personal ego and to your own satisfaction, you are actually hurting your mixing abilities. Because again, 70 to 90% of mixing is flexibility and being able to solve problems to the subjective paradigm of the person giving like this ambiguous subjective end goal that cannot be properly articulated by the artist, management, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So if they say that they want it to sound like this and they give you feedback and they like tell you how, that is mixing. That is how you practice mixing. There is no objective end goal. And you have to completely remove that from your mind. There is no objective end goal. And if there is, it is given to you by a subjective, nuanced client or the song in itself. The song will tell you what it wants to do oftentimes, but how we interpret that. And then anyway, so
yeah, I think one of the lines that sounds the cheesiest, but is also very true, is like part of the art of mixing is and mastering anything in our actual engineering space is learning to not do anything when the time calls for it, which could mean that if you don't have to roll off the low end on it, you don't. Because sometimes, like we talked about this on another episode, where sometimes leaving a buildup like in a certain frequency range adds to the mix because it adds a certain character or emotion to it. So having the cleanest mix isn't always the goal. Sometimes leaving the mix dirty, leaving it kind of lo-fi where it doesn't have the most prettiest highs and the boomiest lows, like sometimes that's exactly the vibe. And learning to distinguish that and what the artist is looking for is like the most important skill you can have. There's personal bias and there's learning how to mix for your client.
Yeah, that's incredibly important. That is the reason why you look for clients locally or on the internet. And this is why we highly recommend practicing mixing with a client, because it's not really practice. Like sound gym is not really ear training. It kind of is, but not really, because it's not practical.
Yeah.
It's that practical application is not really transferable. Same thing with, or it is, but only to like a tenth of a degree that you think it does. Same thing with practicing with fake stem, like with stems with no clients. Like it does help, but like only 10%.
Yeah, it helps you learn a plugin, like hear what plugin's doing, but then it's still on you to see if that plugin is actually doing something that you think the client would want to hear.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the plugins and how we use them solves emotional needs to be tied to an emotional desire created by the song and the artist.
Mm-hmm.
The song and the artist wants to be more emotional in this section. Then you have to transfer and use the engineer, the part of the creativity of the engineer, the majority of the creativity of the engineer is how do you create a sense of intimacy with technical know-how and tools?
Yeah.
Like, okay. Anyway, so that wasn't really a question that you asked, but I think that's important to talk about before we answer your question. So how do you find people to mix for? This is one of the difficult things with like with age. Like if you're trying to take more music seriously as an older adult, it is difficult to do so, because the best thing to do is find a bunch of people that are at your same level. And when is a better time to find people that are at the same level if you are young? If you are in college or in high school, that is the best time to find everyone, because everybody's at the same level. Everybody's starting from the bottom. So that's the best time to start people. But if you are older, I've heard of clients use like Reddit and be like, hey, I'm trying to practice mixing. And they go to like a songwriter, r/songwriter or songwriting or like music and stuff, and just being like, hey, I'm willing to do a free mix or do it for really cheap for practice and feedback. I'm willing to do this. Yeah, sometimes it is going up to open mic nights and putting yourself out there and be like, hey, I don't know if you're interested. But the reality is if you have no experience and you go to a show where Panic at the Disco is playing and you go up to them and be like, hey, can I record you for free? They're not going to say yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because it is part of the creative process as well. And there is risks on both sides involved. I'm definitely accounting for the risk of the artist taking with you, as the mixer, like that you might not align creatively, or you might do the classic engineer thing, which is you try to provoke and impose a superiority of objective creativity, mm-hmm. which is crazy. Ads, open mics, ads on boards in music stores, billboards on music stores, asking around on social media. Hell yeah, all of those things. I think me telling you exactly how to do it is something that it can be found with like simple ChatGPT or Google. Like exactly how, where you look and how you look is something that you can Google. It's no benefit to me telling you. More importantly, I think the benefit that ChatGPT can't give you is me to enforce you telling you why that's important. And to tell you that everybody has different ways, and this is part of your journey. Yeah. You're exactly where you need to be right now in this moment of time, and how you solve this issue based on the infinite amount of options available to you is how you build your future career and your life in the future.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in like a stressful way to give overweight something, but I mean that in like some people do it with just Reddit. And there's pros and cons to finding people on Reddit. And some people do it with just Fiverr. And there's pros and cons to that. It's not about the path that you take. It's about choosing the path that you take.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Sweet. The last episode relit a fire. I'm glad. Great. So there's that and set of questions there. I hope that helps, Skatebar JP42. It looks like, he wrote, I might read this later. I'm just realizing that I'm just reading right now that he made a blog post.
I clicked the link. I asked for an updated link because it goes to WordPress and asks you to sign up for it or kind of thing, for WordPress specifically. So
yeah, we'll have to read that later.
Yeah, I'm
okay,
down.
The next question is from at Jesper Calvoy on Instagram, mm-hmm. and he posted a non-American song. He says, great love from Norway. You always to DM you questions if we have to either answer here on the podcast. I have one such question. Link to the song below. This song and a lot of other pop songs these days have a breathy overtone to the vocals. I do not mean that they are bright, because obviously, but it all almost sounds like an extra layer of somewhat of a processing technique. It might also be the high-end mics deliver this quality, which is boosted by the mix. But if you would give me a push in the right direction for achieving such a breathy, fine top end in my vocals, I would much appreciate it. Thanks. Okay. I'm not going to play the example because of obvious copyright infringement.
Mm-hmm.
But the vocal is pretty much like your typical pop vocal. If you listen to anything like Ariana Grande, I'm sure mm-hmm. that you would understand. Very breathy, yeah. Very airy. Lou, before I say my thing, what do you think? What do you want to talk about?
I mean, I can talk about the way I like going about it to get that out of something that's not always fully there. Because there is certain microphones that do lend themselves to having that a little bit. But usually what we hear in a mix is kind of an exaggerated form of it. It's usually not that bright out the gate unless you're using a microphone that intentionally sounds that way, which is usually not the case because most times the first microphone engineers will throw up is something that usually lends itself as a good overall across the board, you know, good microphone, good mids, good lows, like something that represents a natural vocal well. And then sometimes we'll manipulate the top end up. And when that's the case, I like to do parallel processing. I like to do like a very compressed vocal with a very tamed top end that I can then brighten up and know that when sibilance comes up and all that, it's kind of accounting for that. And we're not getting like super peaks, but that way I don't have to overly de-S the main vocal. So like natural S's can still come through while the top end on the S is still very present and pushed, but it's hyper compressed and everything. It's meant to not be like loud when you hear an S or a T come through. But there's this plugin. It's funny because I don't like this plugin because I always end up having to fix it, but I believe it's free. I think it's called Air from Steven Slate. I think it's Fresh just Air? Called Air. Fresh Air. Yeah. It does this little bit of whining around like 8, 9, 10K. There's something that it does that I always end up having to notch out, but that one's actually pretty good. If you're looking for like a quick fix, like that's what that plugin was meant for. But, more recently I've been using, this one is paid or you can get it with a subscription, Antares Vocal EQ. They have a nice air band on it. Which is supposed to kind of emulate what the Mog EQ4 is. Once again, we talked earlier about Plugin Alliance. Plugin Alliance has the Magnum K, has the Air 2 and the Air 4, I think it is. Or the EQ2, EQ4.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's an air band on those that are really useful too. But realistically, once again, for me, 99% of the time, it's a parallel bus. I try not to over boost top end on the main vocal track for myself. It just hasn't really led to the results that I personally like. And once again, it comes down to bias at that point, you know, because some people probably do it directly on the lead vocal and it works out fine for them. But I guess for what I'm looking for, a parallel bus with something like Mog EQ4 or something like that boosted, but really well contained, maybe using Soothe behind it to really hold down some resonance up there that's kind of like a little harsh to my ear helps. But yeah, parallel processing for me is the winner.
Yeah. Well, first off, quick plugin comment on that plugin, Fresh Air. Fresh Air is one of those plugins where like the first 25% should be the entire knob.
Yes.
Like 25% of that plugin should be 100%.
It's insane how much it can do, which I guess in the case of like ribbon microphones could be super helpful. But even then, I don't think I would use more than 25% on a ribbon mic, just hearing what else comes with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Top end on the vocal, like Lou said, it is partially based on the microphone. Specifically, a lot of cheap microphones have distortion in the top end.
Yeah.
Top end is very sensitive and difficult to get right, like from a hardware perspective. This is a little bit beyond my understanding, so I'm not going to pretend like I'm extra knowledgeable about this. But from what I understand, even the size of the capsule and the quality of the capsule can lead to specific amounts of distortion in the top end. Yeah. And when you boost distorted top end, it becomes harsh. A cleaner top end is more easy to manipulate. More expensive microphones typically have cleaner signals, and they're easier to manipulate with EQ without feeling a sensation of harshness. That being said, in 2025, I think the quality of most, even cheaper microphones, unless you're buying them on Temu for less than like $100, they're pretty fair and across the board, and you can find something within a budget that is pretty good. That being said, if you're trying to get a hyper bright, breathy vocal with an SM7B, that's just a wrong mic choice. Yeah. Not because the SM7B is bad, but
it's
you do
great.
Have to. Yeah, it's a great microphone, but that's just a wrong mic choice. You've decided that you want to dunk, but then you on NBA 2K, you pick the guy that's like 5'2". And it's like, why would you do that? Like,
it's because they got the hops cheat code going on, man.
I guess. Yeah,
it's for comedic effect.
Yeah. I don't even know where that metaphor came from. Completely out my ass. And then just don't do that. That being said, you know what I'm always surprised by is even if you have like a really nice bright mic that has a clean top end, in order to achieve that airiness, which oftentimes is like 8 to 14K and above, right? Mm-hmm. One, it can easily be overdone, especially like 8 to 10K can easily be overdone. Be careful of that. And even I've dipped with very tight Q bell like bands because I can still hear up to like 17K. I've dipped like 16K. 14 to 16K can also get really harsh too if you're not careful. That being said, I'm always surprised in order to achieve that how much I need to leave in the unpleasant things that bother my ears, that bother me. And then also how much I need to boost, even if with a C800G, if you want like a nice breathy vocal, sometimes you have to boost more than you're comfortable with or cut more lows than you're comfortable with. Not always the case, but like it's typically not going to be a 2 or 3 dB boost kind of thing. It might be a little bit more. Just be open to the, like pay attention to the sound that you want. And be brave and don't feel shame based on how much you're already boosting. Obviously, there's a way to overdo it. But if you're using references and you're comparing, sometimes it's just a lot of boosting. And to Lou's point, it's not boosting 3K. It's a lot of like top end, like 40K on the Mog EQ is great starting place.
Yeah.
If you're on Plugin Alliance, like the 26 broadband shelf on the any of the AMIC EQs is a great place to start.
If fresh you're on air UAD, can be, the MEW EQ4.
Yeah, the Massenburg EQ on UAD or the native version. Also a great place to start. Even, there's a lot of great places to start. Even Fresh Air, the free Fresh Air is a great place to start. Fresh Air also does this thing where there's a little bit of a dip before it starts boosting. So it dips around that 8 to 10K, if I'm not mistaken, depending on which one you use. I think this is not so much about how you do it. If once we understand the how is anywhere above like 10, 12K, it's more about like having the self-awareness and the confidence. And oftentimes for anybody with tons of self-awareness, is the bravery to do more than you're typically used to doing. Mm-hmm. So just be open to that new feeling, that experience, and push it a little bit too hard. And because you can always turn it down, and make it darker later. But this is very easy to overabuse as well. So just be mindful and try to make that decision consciously. There's really no secret to it. If you're not using an SM7B. You can get that airy top end in most condenser mics across the range on budget. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Okay. That being said, we are friends and sponsored by the mics that we're using right now, Lauten Audio.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that if you'd like to get a deal on a Lauten mic, just talk to Lou. Just DM Lou. Not me. Don't ask me. DM Lou.
Yeah, just
ask
let me
Lou
know.
Somehow. And you can give some discounts on Lauten Audio. Fantastic mic. Eden has is it a $3,000 mic?
It's $4,000.
Oh shoot. So from their $1,600 or $1,200 price range and above, they have something called like the Voice.
Yeah, thing, so like the voicings. Atlantis and the Eden have this.
Okay, so the Atlantis is switch. Yeah, yes. Is the Atlantis 1200 or 1600?
I think nowadays it's closer to 1600.
Cool. It's got a voicing switch, so it's got like the C800G type, super.
Yeah, the forward
super
setting.
Open top end, forward setting. They got like a neutral setting, and then they got like a darker 47 type setting.
Mm-hmm.
So you have voicings within a singular mic. The great microphone, by the way, it was the Eden was the mic that we used the most and was loved the most by clients across the board.
1758.
In our commercial studio.
That's what it is.
Sweet. Yeah, so it's closer to two, actually.
Yeah.
It was still half the price of the Eden.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, I think that's it for answering questions there. We love answering your questions. We need to systematize how to answer questions, how to ask questions. I think what we're going to do is if you want to ask questions for us to answer on the occasion, please keep it to on the Discord. At the bottom of the Discord, there is a channel called Mixing Music Podcast. and put it in the discussions tab. Hashtag discussions in the Mixing Music Podcast in our Discord. To join the Discord, just go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/discord. And then also, as always, this episode is brought to you by the Mixing Music Podcast. If you want more subscriber-only episodes and some extra free content that is available to both our free and paid subscribers, go to our Patreon. That's mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. All of our exclusive episodes and the customized RSS feed that you can import into Apple Podcasts or use natively on Spotify, right, is mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Right now, James and I are re-uploading all of our exclusive episodes. There's over 250 that, but right now, since we're kind of restarting from scratch, at this current moment in time, February 10, 2025, there's about 100 up right now. So go and subscribe if you want to go listen. They're all technical episodes. They're kind of unhinged and fun. So go check that out. All right. On that note, thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today.